Good morning. It's good to see everyone out. If you're visiting, we are glad that you are here and that you took time to join us. We're always glad to see our regular members, and if you're joining us via Zoom, we're glad you were able to do that and hope that one day you can be with us in person as well. If you'd like to open your Bibles to Mark chapter 9, Mark chapter 9 is where we're going to be spending most of our time this morning. And as you do that, I'd like you for you to imagine taking a bright sunny day. We were blessed with a very bright day this morning, and today is supposed to be fairly warm but very sunny. And you're going to go up on a mountain with your friends. And you get up to the top and you look out and you see the majesty of creation. You're high enough, you can see the tops of the tree lines below. Maybe you can see some of the other hilltops, mountain tops. Maybe just taking in that cool, crisp air that you have when you're up that high and just be able to enjoy that. Maybe even seeing a few animals gently going throughout their day. And you look around and you say, boy, this would be a really hard day to improve on. This would be a day that I'd just like to just take in and just stay here for a long time, and I just don't see anything getting better than what I can see right now. This morning, we'd like to take a look at a text that actually improves on that day. In Mark chapter 9, starting in verse 2, we're going to kind of just work through this text here between starting in Mark 9, 2. It says, after 6 days, Jesus took up with him Peter, James, and John, and led them to a high mountain by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. And his clothes became radiant, intense white, so that no one on earth could bleach them. So that's a word that we don't typically use in a sentence today. I don't think that I've used transfigured in a word other than maybe when discussing this text. But to give us a quick little bit of background, so Jesus and his disciples are in the northern part of Israel, up near the Sea of Galilee. And this will be one of his last events before he makes his final trek to Jerusalem for that final time. So it says that he goes up on a high mountain, and we're not really told which one. There's speculation that it was either Mount Tabor or Mount Hermon, but we aren't given that. So that type of information isn't necessarily needed for us because we're not told. But it says that he was transfigured before him. And so as we think of that, that means that he's now transformed. So it just means he's going to change. And so there's something extremely different about Jesus at this time. So it says that in Matthew's account, it tells us that his face shone like the sun. Again, if we think of the day that we have today, when you go out and that warm, bright sun comes on your face, and you can think of just how that feels. And now you are in the presence of Jesus. And not only have you known him as a man and just the things that he has done through the power of God and just saying this is the one that who is the Messiah, but now you've seen him transform. And so we not only see him as a man, but now we see him as his divine glory, his glory that is changing and showing these three men. And it says that his clothes became white. Now, again, he's going up a mountain. You think you're climbing up a mountain that your shoes, your sandals, the bottom of your clothes are going to be covered in dust, potentially even mud, depending on the situation. And all of a sudden, his is white. Bright white. This is purity. This is saying, this is Jesus. He is pure. He is clean. And he is the one that we are going to focus on. So if we continue on in Mark chapter 9 and going on into verse 2, and there appeared to him Elijah with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. And Peter said to Jesus, Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. For he did not know what to say, for they were terrified. So here we have two of the men show up. Now, how the men knew that this was Moses and Elijah were not told. Maybe in the conversation between Jesus and these two men, and the names are mentioned. But it's obvious to them that they know that this is Moses and Elijah. We realize that they're not here to teach Jesus. They're not going to tell him anything that he doesn't know. They're not there at this point in time to learn from him. We know that they had lived so many years before in the Old Testament, but we see that they are here to testify and bear witness of him, that they are here to confirm him. And so we might ask ourselves, you know, why is this Moses and Elijah that is doing this? And why are they the ones that were selected to be present? Well, Moses, he's the lawgiver. We're told in Exodus when he was given the law of Moses. That's what they call it. And so he is a lawgiver, and he represents that. We remember, just as Jesus' face shone, that when Moses went up to get those laws, when he came down, his face was shining, his face was glowing, to a point where he had to put a veil over his face because the people, it made him nervous. They were afraid because what happened to you while you were up there? So if we look at Exodus chapter 34, Exodus chapter 34, starting in verse 29, and it says, when Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand, he came down from the mountain. Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. And Aaron and all the people of Israel saw Moses, and behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him. So this was an obvious change in the situation of Moses, just like it is in Jesus. So we also have Elijah who is here. So if you think of people in the Old Testament, Moses and Elijah are definitely two that fit in the top category. These are two of the greatest. So Elijah, with the miracles that he performed, remember that he went up into the heavens as a whirlwind. He didn't experience death the way that others have. But then we can also look at this and say, these two men, while they are no longer are on earth, they are only gone physically, that they still are alive. So just as that pause right there probably made people going, what's going on? Right, Steve? So here we have Peter going, something needs to be said. I don't know what to say, but somebody needs to be talking here. And Peter, back in Mark chapter 9, he says, Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents for you, one for Moses and one for Elijah. He says, I don't know what to say, but I just feel like I have to say something. And so he's going to make tents. So that day that we talked about earlier, where you're up on the mountain and you experience this, now that you've seen Jesus and all of his glory come about, and now you have Moses and Elijah there, it's like, this is a place that we don't want to leave. This is really good for us to be here. I don't ever want to leave this spot. Just think of the people that I am in the presence of. But we realize that Peter and the other two disciples were misunderstanding the situation. So you can imagine if Moses and Elijah were there, boy, there would be hundreds of questions if you had a chance, a time to talk to them. You know, you could ask Moses, what was it like in Egypt before they left? You know, what was it like when you were crossing the Red Sea? You know, you figure there's 6.5 million people crossing the Red Sea at this point in time. I got to believe there was one little boy that walked over to the water and went like this. And his mom looking, go, don't touch that. But there was somebody that wanted to do that. The questions of, you know what, how did you lead that many people? How did you... You know, what were the things that you did? What could you teach the next generation in leading as you led those people for 40 years in the wilderness? Or maybe if you could talk to Elijah and say, boy, that battle that you took on with the priests of Baal, give me a little more detail. We have a very short passage in the scripture that describes what was going on, but give me some more detail. What was going on during that battle? What was that like? Or maybe when you were taken up into heaven in that chariot, you know, did you get burned? It was a chariot of fire. Was it hot? You know, as you went up, what was it like? What was it like to transition into heaven? Just the questions that you would say you would want to ask them. We see in verse 7 and 8, and a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud, "This is my beloved son, listen to him." And they were coming down, and suddenly looking around, they no longer saw anyone but Jesus only. Now you're in the presence of just Jesus. You hear this cloud that comes down and you hear this voice. This is obviously the voice of God that is speaking. And so as we look at this, and he says, "Hear him." We see that the other two guys are gone. The men that you look at and you would say, "Man, I would really like to know more about them," they're no longer there. This gives us a direction as Jesus has to be the center. Jesus has to be the focus. He is the one that we need to listen to. If we go back to Deuteronomy chapter 18, and starting in verse 15, Deuteronomy 18, 15, "For the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your brothers. It is him you shall listen. Just as you desired for the Lord your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly, when you said, 'Let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, or see this great fire any more, lest I die.' And the Lord said to me, 'They are right in what they have spoken. I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brothers, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him.'" We remember that Moses was the lawgiver. You know, God gave him those 10 tablets, or those 10 laws on those two tablets. But he said, there's going to be another one. That's the guy that you're going to have to listen to. That is the guy that whatever he says is going to judge you. That's the guy that if you don't follow what he says, it's not good. So he is the one that you should listen to. So now we see even more. These three men are seeing the glory of Jesus. So we look at this, and so the men climb the mountain. They see Jesus transformed. They see Moses and Elijah. They hear the voice of God. It's done. Okay, let's go back down. You think it's over. Place that I would not want to leave, but it's over. And he's telling them, we're going back down. So if we look at verse 9 and 10, "And as they were coming down the mountain, he charged them to tell no one what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So they kept quiet. They kept this matter to themselves, questioning this rising from the dead might mean." So if you're coming down this mountain, to me, there's a whole lot of things going through my mind. You know, one of them, man, I got to be quiet. And how long am I going to have to be quiet for? You know, what am I going to tell the other 9 disciples when we get down there? Hey, what did you see? What happened? He didn't take us, but tell us what happened. I can't tell you about this really amazing and glorious thing that I saw. I can't tell you about these other two guys that we met. I mean, there's things that you would just say, man, I would just be bursting at the seams. I'd want to tell everybody. But they kept this matter quiet to them. But then the question becomes, now, you mentioned this at the end in our reading this morning, at the end of Mark chapter 8, Jesus plainly explains to them that he's going to die and he's going to be raised again. And so they're questioning this once again. what is this he's going to die thing? Why is this going to happen? How does this happen? When is it going to happen? So as the from the time of this transfiguration to where they go into Jerusalem, it's estimated it's somewhere between 30 and 40 days of travel. So you're going from northern Israel down to Jerusalem. You have this company that's traveling. So estimated, and we're not given specific times, but they're estimating somewhere around 30 or 40 days. And can you imagine trying to say, I got to keep this quiet for this long? I don't know how much longer it's going to go, but I know I got to keep this quiet. And again, what is this thing that's happening about you keep saying you're going to die? Why is that? And then you're going to get raised up one more time. And for how long will that be? Not understanding that it's one time and he'll be raised forever. But they have to keep quiet for this amount of time. So then they ask him, as they're coming down, he says, Elijah does come first, starting in verse 11. And they ask him, why do the scribes say that first Elijah must come? And he says to them, Elijah does come first to restore all things, and how it is written of the Son of Man that he should suffer many things and be treated with contempt. But I tell you that Elijah has come, and they did to him whatever he pleased, it is written of him. So again, they're standing there, and they just witnessed Elijah. Well, why did he leave? He's here. Why doesn't he just stay with us? Why didn't he just come down with us and he can be with us? But he's describing that that's not the one that he was mentioning. If we go to Malachi chapter 4, beginning in verse 4. Remember the law of my servant Moses, the statutes and rules that I commanded him at Horeb and all Israel. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and awesome day of the Lord. And he will turn the hearts of fathers to their children and the hearts of children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the land with a decree of utter destruction. He was telling of another that's coming that's going to be like Elijah. In Matthew chapter 17, his account of this transfiguration, at that point in time, the disciples then realize that he's speaking of John the Baptist. And that whatever they wanted to do, they did to him. Remember, just a few chapters previous to this is when John was beheaded and he was killed for the cause of Christ. But he did this before Jesus died. Shouldn't he have done this after he was dead? Shouldn't he have come afterwards? They were still unclear of what was going on in the sequence of events. So this morning, I'd like for us to have three takeaways. So this is a powerful moment in Jesus' teaching here on earth. We see that his divine glory is revealed, that his face shone like the sun, his clothes were bright white, his true identity is revealed as the Son of God. And we are called to recognize that it is Jesus and him only should be our focus, and it is only him that we should worship. God confirms that Jesus is this authority. This is my beloved Son. Listen to him. These are not words that we can just take lightly. These are not words that we can say, nope, that's a good idea. But these are words that we are told to live by. We are told that these are words that we're going to be judged by. And this might be that we have not listened to those words or that we have not heard those words. But it is those words that are going to judge us. And just as his disciples witnessed this incredible display of Jesus' glory upon this mountain, it should also be a reminder of us that we too can be and should be transformed into following Jesus. That we need to cast away our own desires and put away our own selfish ideas and put Jesus first in our lives. So this morning I'm asking, have we listened to him? Maybe you've never heard the words of Jesus. Maybe this is new to you. We hope that you might ask for us to sit down with you and open our Bibles and explain what he is teaching us. Or worse yet, maybe you have heard those words and you've rejected them. You've turned away from them and you decided that those are not the words that I want to follow. But these are words that we're going to be held accountable to. We may choose to reject, we may choose to never hear, but these are going to be the words that are going to judge us in that last and final day. So again, if you're new to the scriptures, we would love to have studies with you. If you need assistance this morning in the things of this, of matters that maybe you have troubles in your life, we ask that you would come forward as we stand and sing.